Welcome to the Driving Change Podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network, where we live at the intersection of neuroscience and storytelling. If you love great stories and you love understanding the mindset it takes to be a world-class change agent, then join us as our fascinating guests from all walks of life unpack their unique journeys of perseverance and passion, of expertise and experience, and be inspired to use your own story to drive change. Welcome back to the Driving Change Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Jeff Bloomfield. And as usual, I have a very insightful and intriguing guest on today, someone who's, I guess you could call him an expert at the conversation of being curious around the narrative forms of, you see, I'm just going down a straight, you see where I'm going with this? No, you don't have no idea where I'm going with this on the show. I will tell you though, that Andrew Barry is an expert in a lot of ways like us, what we love around communication. He approaches it from a very creative and innovative angle, and I can't wait for him to unpack it. He's the founder and CEO of Curious Lion, and it's a company that specializes in human transformation. They really focus on leaders and teams to help fulfill their potential using methodologies that are in adult learning principles, which is a lot of his background, a little human psychology, which you know we love around here. And we're going to get into his expertise in the power of questions. They're working with a lot of organizations today on how they do this in a very unique way. He started Curious Lion in 2017, but before that, he was actually the head of content for KPMG's executive education. And they decided that they weren't learning anything from him, so they kicked him out to go, no, I'm kidding. He was so good at it that he was able to start his own company to teach more than just the people at KPMG. And he's also got the Learning Culture podcast, which you're going to want to check that out. And you're going to want to follow him as well on social and LinkedIn and other places. Now, he's an original South African, hence the really cool accent that I can't replicate or duplicate, but now lives in New Jersey with his wife and his son. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Jeff, thank you for that amazing intro, and it's really good to be here.
It's great to have you. So, you know, as we always say, nobody really cares what you know until they know about what you care about, and they don't really care about anything about what you can teach them until they believe they can trust you, and they can't trust you until they feel like they can know you. So lay it on us, brother. What's your origin story? Where do you come from? Share with us some of your values, beliefs, who taught them to you, and how you became this amazing human being that's before us today.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. It begins where this accent began in South Africa. And I spent the first 27 odd years of my life there. And it was a very interesting place to grow up. For those who don't know, I mean, most people probably do, but South Africa suffered through 20-30 years of apartheid, which pretty much ended when I was born. So I was born as, you know, a white kid in a solidly middle to upper class kind of upbringing, just, you know, pretty comfortable financially in a country that was, you know, devastated by this separation. And so, you know, grew up quite sheltered from that perspective, which is true for most white South Africans. But, you know, was always curious about it and always was learning a lot about I'm fascinated in South African history. Probably the only person in the world who's more fascinated is my brother, who I think will probably end up writing a book or something on this. He's a tour guide in South Africa, but just entrenched in kind of that history of this continent and this country specifically. And the thing that I want people to know about South Africa is that the original South Africans are not even... they are the minority of the minority. Like, they barely exist anymore. Everybody in South Africa now is, you know, an interloper from various parts. We had the Dutch and the British who colonized. We had, you know, Bantu tribes who moved down through middle parts of Africa, who are now the nine other indigenous. South Africa has 11 indigenous languages, basically English, Afrikaans from the Dutch and the British, and then nine African languages, Xhosa and Zulu and Sotho. And all of these tribes came from somewhere else, you know. So it's this disputed land, this contested land at the bottom of the African continent that is still going through that process of, like, whose is this, you know, who, identity, essentially. And so what this means to me is, you know, this idea of identity has kind of always been ever present for me. And where I've reached in my own personal journey on that is that we are all ultimately fundamentally connected in some way. And that defines a lot. You talked about beliefs and values. It defines a lot about of the work we do. I think we all have some ability to tap into a higher consciousness, a collective intelligence. We can channel that by getting in touch with our own unique ability and identity. And a lot of our work tries to bring that out into people. And I think that's where transformation comes from. And it's all best, I think, described in this concept that I learned from South Africa called Ubuntu. I don't know if have you heard about Ubuntu before?
Someone else was talking about that, but I don't remember exactly what it means.
It's really cool. And it's basically, Ubuntu basically means I am because you are, right? So like I don't have an identity in existence without you helping me bring that into, you know, by your perception of who I am and all that. And so that spirit is fundamental in the African culture. And I think it's rubbed off a lot on me. You know, we are better together. We all have different unique skills and abilities that we can bring to the table. And that's kind of what I've seen a lot in my work. I left South Africa 13 years ago. The other thing about South Africa is it's very small. And my identity was very much defined by who I was growing up. And coming to America, that was an opportunity. And America, I think, presents this opportunity over and over again, which is what I love about it, is you can totally reinvent that identity. And that's what I did. You know, I came here, I didn't know anyone. I knew one person. And I was basically able to start from scratch, which was amazing. I worked at KPMG at that time. So I was lucky in that sense to be able to come over with them. You know, they sponsored my green card and eventually got citizenship and all that, essentially through that firm. But I was able to start from scratch, and I never would have started my business Curious Lion in South Africa. It's just like, we can unpack that if you want, but it's just, it's not the right, it wasn't the right environment. I'm a very different person to who I am now. And I think my present self kind of has reshaped the narrative of my past self and those stories and those lessons and all that growing up. So yeah, I think in a nutshell, that's, you know, that South African root, that Ubuntu, that collectiveness, that we're all connected in some way is there. But it's also married now with this ability to constantly reinvent. And I think I see that in people around me all the time. Like, we all have this insane potential that we, with a little bit of guidance, and this is where I think coaching conversations become so important, which I know you talk a lot about, with a bit of that guidance, the sky's the limit, you know, like there's no telling what you can actually achieve. And I think coming to America taught me that as well.
So you said something there I think is pretty interesting, is I've not heard it said that way before, that your present self has helped you reshape your past self. Mm. Tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I've known it implicitly. And then just recently I came across the work of Dr. Benjamin Hardy, where he made it explicit. And I was like, oh, you know, that's what's happening. And it's essentially this idea that the past, the present, and the future all happens at the same time, essentially, right? Our experience of it. There's no past that is like behind us and we cannot access it anymore. Yes, there are events that happened in the past, but the stories that we tell ourselves, the narratives that we choose to believe, are we have agency over that, right? And so we can, even with trauma, right? And his study kind of looks a lot at post-traumatic growth. Trauma can make or break someone. And it's not, I don't want to sound flippant here and say it's, you know, like it's free agency and everyone can do this, but it takes a lot of work, obviously, but you can define what that story is. And I've certainly done that in my own life, looking at that upbringing and looking at it in new ways.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very wise way to think about. Some people are stuck. They say they're stuck in the past, or they live in the past, or they live in shame of their past, or there's a lot of things in their past that have really held them down from being able to be more, not only in their present, but then it limits their thinking in the future. So I like that we're all a part of the sum of our life's experiences. And we think about it sometimes as a progressive linear path. And once you've stepped past chapter one and you're on to chapter two, well, chapter one's in the rear view, but no, not really. You're saying that it's all threaded through into the past, present, and future into what you would argue is all wrapped up into what's possible, right? What's potential.
Well, and so, so this future self as well, which I'll talk about for a sec, but I think that's why you asked that question to start your podcast, right? Because it's so, what our past does define who we are. But I think the thing that I've started to realize as I've gotten older is that we get to shape that narrative. If you're intentional about it, you can shape that narrative. It doesn't define you. It's not something that happens to you. It's something that you have agency over. And this applies equally to the future self, that concept of who we are. And I know the power of visualization, I'm sure it comes up a lot in your work. We use that a lot. You know, that's a huge thing as well, to think about that whole thread, basically your origin story and your future self. And Benjamin Hardy and Dan Sullivan talk about 10xing that, you know, having something that seems so impossible that it defines that crazy 10x vision, defines the present person you are now, the things you do, how you show up, the goals that you pursue. I really started to play around with that and, you know, preparing for this podcast, thinking about this opening question, just looking at that narrative thread and seeing, like, if I had done this podcast with you 2 years ago, this whole story would have come out differently.
Right.
You know, and I think that's so fascinating.
What's also interesting too is if someone comes on and you ask them a question about, hey, you know, tell us what you're working on today. What are you working on that you're excited about? And then you start talking about everything you're doing at Curious Lion. The listener, which is, by the way, who the show's about, the listener has to determine if they care about that.
Right.
About what you're doing.
Yeah.
But by saying, hey, tell me your origin story and where you come from, even if I have no idea what South Africa looks like, smells like, behaves like, what it's doing is it's triggering in me what my origin story is like. It almost helps people to take an inventory of their own story just simply by sharing your past story, whereas a seems to be someone's present story doesn't have quite the impact to do that psychologically, right? I'm evaluating it in my analytical network when you're telling me a present credibility story versus my emotional empathic network of my own story when you're telling me a personal origin story.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, I wonder if this comes down to that difference between kind of logic-based thought and narrative-based thought. And we have a mutual, you know, friend and podcast guest and et cetera, Angus Fletcher, who many who on this show will have heard on yours. And you know, I learned this from him. Like, I think the way we can describe, and I don't think I even did a great job of that now when I answered your question, is to really get into the nuances and specifics of you know, of what growing up in South Africa was like, right? But that question, if this whole show is just about that, we could unpack a lot of stories around that. And the stories take implicit things that I have figured out and internalized, my values and beliefs, and make them external or explicit. And then the listeners who are listening in here can take that explicit story and internalize it and make it implicit through the process you described, through saying, oh, this is like what I had, or this is not like this, this was different, right? And so then you start to, whereas the present thing, I think also, like, you're answering that question in a much more fact logical base. Like, I have done this and this and this, I get this award, and it's much more like fact based. And that doesn't, it doesn't invite that same level of interaction with it.
Yeah, it's huge. And we teach people this all the time and you can see it unfold. But I think to your point, taking it and pulling it from the unconscious to the conscious helps you go from being intuitive to intentional.
Yeah,
in the way that you ask questions and the way that you communicate with others. So I love it. That's awesome. And you know, Angus is just right up the road at Ohio State with all of his work on all this stuff. And people who haven't listened to that episode can rewind a season and a half and go back and listen to it, because he's very, very sharp at that. So I want to know, what was the, take me into the room where the moment happened, and I know that's never just one moment, but I'm going to make you go there, right? At KPMG, when you said to yourself, self, I should go do this on my own.
Yeah.
Like, when was that spark? And I'm sure it was not just that one moment, but
yeah.
What was the evolution of that moment to the point of having the guts to go do it?
Yeah. You know, this is such a good question. And I've thought about this a lot, because it was definitely a long sequence of events. I think right from the beginning, I knew, you know, I was in, like, this thing about Ubuntu, we talked about connectedness. Or I, because of my interest in that growing up, I was always into, like, Buddhism and meditation, and, like, way before my friends, you know. So this, we're like, I'm talking like late teens, early 20s here. I was really into that kind of thing. And actually, I spent 2 years of my time in South Africa, last year of my college and the first year of my work at KPMG, actually with dreadlocks. And so I had these long dreadlocks. I was barefoot. I wasn't barefoot at KPMG. That was probably a bridge too far, but I was barefoot, you know, college. And so it was very different. I was a very different person back then. So I think a lot of that, like, I just felt like it was interesting. It's at the same time, I was really good at, you know, logical, analytical things like maths and accounting and whatever. So I studied in South Africa to become a chartered accountant, like one of the top professional, the top probably designation you get there. And my dream was to kind of, and sort of a self-imposed, no, not a, an imposed upon me dream, but like that I had assimilated as well. I was like, oh, I should take this path, which was to become the CEO of a company. It's like, okay, that's, you know, I have the potential to do that. I'm going to go on that path. And, you know, ironically, I am the CEO of a company now, but it's my own. That, you know, that was not on the cards back then, right? Not at all. And so I had these like very conflicting, very spiritual, kind of background and interest. And then this ability to be, you know, good at these, you know, things, basically like business things. And so, you know, I was trying to marry those two. And I think that showed up a lot at KPMG. I always thought of a better way to do something. I was always questioning the status quo. And, you know, it's like, I look at my own company now, like I want to have people like that as well. But some people that fulfill certain roles, I don't want them to be doing that. You know, I just want them to be like doing what they're supposed to be doing. And so I think at times I piss people off, and sometimes but others, like mentors of mine, saw that potential, right? And kind of pulled me out and pulled me aside, I guess, and took me under their wing. And funnily enough, there were three strong female leaders that did this for me. One in Johannesburg, and then two here in New Jersey, and all three of them at KPMG. And somehow they saw something different in me. And, you know, and I think, you know, the fact that they were female is significant, because they were, you know, it's a very male dominated, especially one of them, like, grew up in the 90s, like she was the first partner in insurance at KPMG in New York City. And like, that was a massively male dominated thing. And she broke that ceiling, you know? And so I think saw that like, I was different, you know, I could do what you told me to do, but I kind of didn't want to, I was always doing something different. That's the chain of events that finally led up to the point where then I think it just became down to courage, honestly, like having the courage to do it. Cause I like had always wanted it. I always seen that I could think about things differently. And then the courage thing eventually clicked into place where, yeah, it's kind of funny actually, cause it was a complete false. Like I told myself a narrative, which felt right at the time, that I had a friend who left KPMG just before I did. He went to JP Morgan. He had a really good position there. And it felt like there would be a good opportunity at JP Morgan. So I'd break free, do my own thing, and they would be my first clients. And what a great first client to have, right? So I did that, and I made all these, we were going to do compliance training videos. And so I made a portfolio of these things, and we had this long sales process with them. They didn't become a client. I've never actually worked with a bank, and we've never created compliance videos. But like that thing is what got me to do it. And what I learned quickly was that the market tells you what they want. And so just showing up and being, and then I was like, I had no choice. You know, I had to just show up and engage and figure out what people needed. And then, so at the beginning, I was just taking on whatever I could. And that's kind of how it got started. I think, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. I had to figure out a plan. And I did, and I built up the courage in whatever way felt right at the time to do it. All those things kind of led to where I am.
Now where did the lion come from?
Yeah. So the South African connection, obviously, like it's always been a spirit animal for me growing up in South Africa. I'm also a Leo by star sign by birth. So that's in it there. Just a spirit animal, you know, and as you get deeper into it, the way the pride is structured, the hierarchy within it, the collaboration, like everything about lions live appealed to me. I can go to a safari and just spend 5 days staring at lions. Like, yeah, it's amazing.
You're drawn to the spirit animal of the lion and the actual lion. To me, the irony of a lion is in the States, you know, we've got the antithesis, right? Lions are known as the king of the jungle, but then you got the Wizard of Oz where the lion had no courage.
And yeah.
But it's that dichotomy, I think, that makes the lion such a fascinating, with your company being called Curious Lion.
Yeah.
It's got a pretty cool, so I was curious how that all developed.
Well, and curiosity was the key part, but the other part was I liked about curious was strange, different, you know, like, and so that was also like, I always thought that was part of what we were, you know, it was a different take on whatever we were doing at the time.
Yeah. And I hated that expression growing up, is, you know, my dad would always say, you know, curiosity would kill the cat. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, my papaw would have a different take on it, right? Like curiosity also comes up with five different ways to solve the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So the key is to not get killed while you're solving the problem, right?
I know. I read the stories about you growing up on that farm in Ohio. And you wouldn't have got far without curiosity.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, good. Well, let's, I love your, a little bit about your expertise, because you've been doing this now since 17 and you've kind of figured it out as you go along. And I've met and talked with a lot of entrepreneurs, and as they've grown something, obviously, you know, you're still in business, so you haven't had to have a real job, as I say, since 2017. What would you say is maybe the one or two really keys to your success at being able to stay out of the workplace and create your own entity and your own kind of idea of what you can do to solve problems for other people, and then actually build a team around it? What have been a couple of your keys to success for those who are maybe thinking about starting something new, or maybe they're in the middle of something new and just need some encouragement?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing that comes to mind is a thing that we are kind of building a product around now is adaptability. You know, we have gone through so many iterations. You know, at the beginning, it was these compliance videos for banks, never happened. The real first work was just whatever people had. And it was really just me using the royal we with everything, but like I was just a freelancer. And then, you know, slowly built a team of freelancers, and then we were taking on, you know, it's kind of like where we got to now. And I think we're kind of going into a 3.0 phase now, which is, you know, from like taking briefs from clients to be able to have a clear point of view around what, leadership development and organizational effectiveness and all that should look like. So yeah, it's definitely been an evolution. And I think being able to adapt to the client's needs, requests, what's happening, like the adaptive intelligence product that we're working on now has really come about because of my own experience. But I mean, everybody around us in our team, and certainly I think throughout the world's experience through COVID, you know, like having, that was a huge shock to the system. And I think for me, where I'm at with all of this now is that is just the norm going forward. Like it is not going to ever not be like that. And so to treat change as something that's linear, you know, finite and predictable is just crazy to me. Like, why are we doing this? You know, like, and unfortunately a lot of leadership and management training does that. Like, it's not linear and it's not finite and it's not predictable. Like, why are we treating or training people like it is, these three things? So that's a big thing, like being able to adapt to that, to change, has definitely helped a lot. And I try to reverse engineer my process a lot on these things. And I think a lot of it is just being, a lot of it comes down to just being reflective. I don't know how important this is in your work, but like, you know, to me, like most ancient wisdom can be summarized with the phrase, like, know thyself. You know, like that's ultimately what it comes down to, and being able to really know who you are, like what your values and beliefs, like you asked at the beginning, but also like, what are the stories I tell myself? How are they limiting me? What new stories can I tell myself? What does my future self want and not need? You know, all these kind of things is just the key to that adaptive ability, which is growth, right? Which is growth mindsets and all these other things. So I see those parallels across a lot of people's work, which is awesome. And I think it's all for the better of, you know, mankind ultimately. I'm getting a little sidetracked here, but yeah, adaptability is key. And then I think the other one, honestly, is trust around the team that I've built. I think that's one of the things I'm most proud about around with our team, is that there's an element of trust that I have in them and they have in with me, but then also amongst themselves. And I think a lot of this, because I've witnessed, I've had leaders who are like this, and I've had leaders who are not, and we work with clients that have a mix of both. And ultimately what it comes down to is just that vulnerability to show up in front of them and be honest. I mean, I had to do this year. We've had a tough year compared to previous years. Like, in fact, I think this year I've realized that business and work came too easily to me up until this point. And this year, like, we've had to put on our big boy pants and like really figure out what's going on in our business and the market. And that's been good, right? That's been good for us. Like, we're going to be a better company because of this. And I've had to tell my team this, you know, I've had to tell them that things aren't as easy as they once were. We're not getting as much work. You know, I've actually had to tell them that I almost don't know how we got work in the past. That's the problem. You know, like, it sort of happened a lot. Like, and I didn't really care to try find out because it kept coming in and things were good. And now we've had to really figure out why and get more specific in our positioning and our point of view and all that. And again, it's all going to make us better.
Right.
But the sharing, just to go back to the trust thing, the sharing of that with my team has been a huge factor in that trust being there. Because now, even in this tough time, they're still there, right? They know, like, we're going to get through this and want to contribute in ways outside of what's expected of them. And so it's incredible. And I think ultimately that's leadership and trust, or trust is like the core part of leadership for me.
Yeah, and I think you touched on this earlier too, and I can relate to this, is I've had to learn over the 12 years of running Brain Trust, is though I might have the innovation gene where I'm thinking of some crazy creative thing in the shower that's, you know, next level stuff that we'll put together on, you know, whatever, how we're going to use AI to do something nutty with. I used to make the mistake of thinking that was creative thinking and innovation. What I do, my ideation is the way that that's the only lens of ideation and creativity. And what I've learned, because you touched on it earlier, is everybody has a role and a function here. Now, not everyone's wired the same way that I'm wired, yet they can be innovative inside their role. Mm-hmm. And giving them the space and the freedom to do that without them feeling like they've got to innovate the way that I do, or at the same time, that they have to innovate at all, but that they should be thinking about, hey, I have this role and the function in the company. I should be thinking about creative and innovative things to do inside there that don't break our process, right? That enhance it. And that was a hard lesson for me, because I'm the next big idea guy, right? That's part of the world I live in every day. And I've had to throttle a little bit of that back, not in the way that I'm doing it, how often I'm communicating it.
Yeah.
We create an environment of trust, to your point, that lets others feel like they have a voice in innovation.
Yeah. I think this brings up a lot of things for me. Ultimately, what you're trying to get to is the best possible outcome, right? So I'm assuming from little I know about you, but from talking to you, you welcome constructive criticism, feel like you want to get the best outcome, not that your idea is right, but that you get to the right idea. And the beauty of that, what you said, everyone's wired differently, is, and this is I learned from Angus, is that the power of perspective shifting. And so seeing things from multiple different angles. And so many people talk about this through like ancient literature and all that sort of stuff, is just the more perspectives you can see things from, the better. You know, like Einstein and Edison talked about this a lot. Like, they didn't come, and this is the common, like, people have this misconception about creativity that, like, that idea in the shower comes fully formed. You know, like, it doesn't, right? You know, it doesn't. And like, people need to know that that's okay. Like, the first thing that comes out of your mind is the thing that came out of your mind. Like, just keep going with that, right? And then someone adds to it. Like, the creative process is about refining and elaborating and then stripping away. And you can't do that on your own. Like, no human brain can totally do that on their own. It's all, you're all taking in inputs from other people and other things. And so, yeah, I mean, the collaborative nature of creativity is fascinating to me.
Do you find it's been, as you guys have grown and you've added people to the team, one of the things that's an advantage of being a founder is you've learned how to increase the speed with which your ideation and innovation goes from large scale all over the wall to quickly into practical, into execution. And you've learned, your brain has learned the process of how to take this big giant idea that's all over the size of the wall and immediately look at it and go, that won't work, but we're going to run with this one. And then do that in a team environment is hard to kind of hold back, right? When you've got people who are now ideating, but you can clearly see which parts of their ideation is not going to work and not necessarily stomping on it, but letting it kind of breathe because you could be wrong. Like having enough of that self-awareness that you might get too fast, right?
So this is such a good point because the enemy of creativity is early judgment, right? Like that is such a, I've had to really learn that as well because I'm also like the first to want to, no, you know, like but the enemy of creativity is early judgment. So you have to resist that urge to do it. And we use the creative problem solving sort of framework. So breaking problem solving.
I'm going to quote you on that. I'm going to write that down and quote
you
on that.
I'm sure I stole it from somewhere, but it's, yeah.
Well, you stole it from somewhere, but you're going to get credit for it.
But yeah, so you see that show up when you break creativity down or any problem solving process down, rather. There's, you know, there's sort of defining the problem, then there's like solution creation, and then there's, you know, implementation. And each of those processes has what you're describing, this like diamond shaped process of diverge and then converge. So around the problem statement, like diverge, what are we actually solving here? What are the criteria for success? And then converge to that actual problem. Now we understand the problem. Do the same thing in solutioning, you know. And that's where, like, I think Angus's work is so great because he's really pushes the boundaries, I think, of what's possible around diverge. Because if you adopt that thing of we're just in diverge now. So move judgment at the door, right? Leave judgment at the door. Like we're not converging at all. We're just diverging. So I want to hear everyone's story. And we're going to be here until we've heard the full story. And no excuse, no, like, this shows up a lot in like after action reviews or, you know, postmortems or whatever projects where it's so easy to like jump to the, oh, let's just get to the list of things that we want to get done, you know, or like improve for next time. But no, if you actually spend the time to diverge properly and hear from everyone's perspective, you will get to that outcome in the same like amount of time, but you will understand it more, like in your bones, more implicitly, because you've gone through that narrative process. So yeah, I think that's a huge lesson, I think, for everyone. Just like hold off on that judgment thing, get all as many ideas as possible, because you don't know which ones may look like shitty ideas at the beginning, but when you combine it with another one that came out, you know, 15 minutes later, yeah, you never know what's possible.
And that kind of dovetails into then, we're talking about it almost in the constructs of a business or an entrepreneur or a small business or even inside a corporate America in a boardroom, it's creatively doing brainstorming. But I think it also happens in our everyday personal lives, doesn't it? So I think about how people have an idea about something and then quickly, I say all the time, the most important story you're going to hear all day is the one going on between your ears, is how quickly we converge our own thoughts into, well, that probably won't work.
Yeah.
So you have this brilliant idea inside your head in the shower, and by the time you got your socks on, you've already convinced yourself it's no good.
Yeah.
And so personally, I think we limit ourselves and our thinking and our potential just because we prejudge. And so then that what you do is you create a pattern of that behavior. And then next thing you know, you've got a fixed mindset. You didn't even know how you got it.
Yeah, totally. I think it's actually probably for me personally more of a problem in my personal life because I feel like that's a domain where I feel like I know what I'm doing, like a bit more like whatever. And so I'm more also opinionated. I'm more like sure about what I know. And it's really, again, a lot of people talk about this, but it's more about what you don't know. Right. That's more important than what you do.
Yeah, it's a hard thing too, right? And I think part of it's the self-preservation orientation and the ego and all the different things around your own pride. And then it's coupled with this voice of complete insecurity for most people. So you're in this tug of war that you're having every day.
Constant.
Right? And I think all of us are. So I think when guys like you and I talk about it, someone out there listening is going, yes, okay, that's these guys, you know, they're running their own business and they're idiots. They don't know what they're talking about either. They wake up every day struggling with the same things I'm struggling with.
Totally. I always say like everyone's winging it. Everyone's winging it. And it's this process. Cause like, I think you can have it figured out for a while and to the outside, it can look like you've got it all figured out, but it's just, everything happens in peaks and valleys. Like it just means that someone's seen you at the peak and the valley's coming. Like, and if you're not, and that's why I love that you talk about intention so much. If you're not intentional about preparing for that and thinking about that ahead, like you're going to have a really bad valley, you know, but you can be intentional about it and be ready for it. And and just recognizing that everyone's going through that. No one really has it figured out.
And what's your predisposition? Because I think a lot of folks are predisposed to, they have a thought or an idea and their predisposition is almost to go, well, that's a bad idea. But what if it's a good idea? If you play the what if I'm right? What if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? What if I'm right? But most people tend to play one side of that conversation, and then they kind of keep beating that neural pathway into a groove, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think the key here is to understand what your natural inclination is, and then to make sure you surround yourself with people who can balance that. And I didn't do this intentionally in marrying my wife, but that is what has happened in our thing. I am the kind of person who sees, like, gives the benefit of the doubt, sees the positive side, like, trust someone implicitly, like, yes, this idea works, and then show me that it doesn't. And she's the opposite. She's like, she sees all the reasons why it won't work, you know? And so there's tension. There's a lot of that conflict that can, depending on what we're debating, but in terms of getting to the right outcome, it's so valuable because, like, yeah, it's all my blind spots. And
see, we're doing marriage counseling now. You didn't even know we were going to get into that today, right?
Exactly. I know.
Well, my wife and I are very similar that way, where she's the opposite. She's much more pragmatic, and I have an anything is possible mindset.
Yeah.
And it's ludicrous. Like, it's absolutely ludicrous because, you know, I tell my team this, like, hey, I'll have 10 good ideas this week, and two of them are probably pretty good.
Yeah.
The art is learning how to pick out the two out of the eight.
And that's also the key, right? Because you've got to focus. You can't run all 10. Otherwise you wouldn't, you know. So yeah, that's you need those people to help you do that.
So what do you think as we kind of start to round third here? What is your calling? As you see, and I know you're one of those people that knows not to ever define it as such, as finite.
Yeah, yeah.
But what are you dreaming for over the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, or hoping? And I know hope's not a strategy, but we all have these kind of inclinations of dreams that we're heading in a direction, and we think that our purpose is kind of guiding us to do this kind of work for these kind of folks and solve these kind of problems. What's that look like for you?
Yeah, I love this question. Yeah, I think for me, the thing that I've always wanted and always hoped for people is to experience personal transformations. And, you know, I'm very that way inclined for myself. And I think while I can probably push this a little too far in that, oh, this is possible for everyone. Like, I think the ability to reflect isn't evenly distributed, right? Some people just can't do that and you know, don't want to. And for whatever reasons, there's a lot to do. I don't know if you're like into the Enneagram and kind of like, you know, effective IFS and all that sort of stuff. Your childhood experiences define a lot of this, you know, and I've, thanks with my therapist, I've sort of understood this a bit better, right? That not everyone is wired that same way, whether it's from neglect or trauma, and different things can make that impossible. But that said, I think everyone has a potential that is more than where they are now. And I think with the right kind of guidance and mentoring and conditions, sort of the system part that we talk about, we can help people do that. And so from a business perspective, what I'm driven by, what I love doing and what I want to be doing for the next 20 years is helping people achieve personal transformations at scale. And so we love working with big teams where, you know, the company's large enough where our stuff works best with that kind of size. So we can... I think that's what we're the best at doing. We can engineer an experience. Typically, it's a 9 to 12 months experience that has the best chance of getting that cohort of people a personal transformation, right? There's a lot of factors else that need to go into the motivation being number one. But for the most part, and we work with like high potentials and high performers. So for the most part, motivation is not an issue. And so we think we can create those conditions and that experience that can get people from basically an identity shift. You know, like they will come out feeling like a different person, a better person. And the part that really gets me going is that this shows up in their life. And I think you talk about this as well. It's not just showing up in that sales conversation or that coaching conversation or whatever, in the business decisions they have to make. It's in their personal lives. You know, and I think that's a lot of the stuff we talked about is universal. We even went there, like to how it shows up in personal life. And so that to me is awesome. I think just being able to facilitate that for people, I could do that for forever.
That's great. All right, last question. We're going to take it right off of that question. Is however many years down the road, let's hope it's 30, 40 years, you know, your time here is done and you've got someone who is the one or two closest people in your life are getting up talking about the impact that you made. on this earth. What do you hope they say about you?
Yeah, I think if people said that I showed up every single time and showed up in a way that made them want to be better, that would be great for me. Like, just showed people what's possible. Not in the sense of like I'm going to wow them or outdo them or whatever, but just showed up that it's a mixture of vulnerability and I want to keep growing and I want to keep getting better. And like, if I show up like that and try to be my best self in front of them, that they see something in that and go, yeah, I want to make a change like this too. Yeah.
That's why I know it's a deep question, one to end on, but I think it's a guiding question, right?
Totally.
You started this thing off with looking backwards to look into the present. And as we look into the future, I think if we were ultimately at the end of our time in this realm and we looked backwards, that's probably a question we should ask ourselves, right? Was what do we want said?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think if you asked me this maybe 10 years ago, I would have said, I would have like listed things that I wanted to have achieved. And like, that's, but I don't think people remember people like that. Right. Like I lost my mom a year and a half ago now, and it was a life-changing thing that happened. And one of the biggest lessons I've got from that is those memories of her are the way she showed up and the things that it's impossible to describe. And I think you almost have to lose someone that close to know what that means. But like, yeah. I know like the parts, there are parts of me that are me because of that, because of how she showed up, not because of some concrete thing she did or, what I mean? And so, yeah, I think ultimately if I can be like that and showing up, being present with everyone I'm with, then I've got a good chance I'm going to inspire one or two people along the way to do the same.
I love it. That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on. I enjoyed the conversation tremendously. I think it probably, through a narrative-based way, created some curiosity in the listener to think about their own story, maybe slightly different as well, and what they're working on. And so where can we find more out about you and your company and what you're working on?
Yeah, Jeff, thanks for all of that. And I really enjoyed this conversation as well. So if people want to check out more about Curious Lion, go to curiouslionlearning.com. And if you want to learn about adaptive intelligence, I touched on that a little bit earlier, we have a free email course on the topic. So curiouslionlearning.com/flip for flipping the script. And you can get that course there and learn a little bit more about it.
That's great. Well, this has been a blast. And also, don't forget that if you're listening out there, check out Andrew's podcast as well, the Learning Culture podcast, and which has a lot of great, intriguing conversation on it as well. And we'll have you back periodically just to check in with you and seeing how things are going and how you're evolving.
And I'm going to get you on that show because I'd love to hear your take on learning culture for your team at Brain Trust. That should be a great conversation.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being on and enjoy the rest of your time this year as you plan for next year, and best of luck to you.
Yep. Thank you, Jeff. Take care.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I want to tell you about my podcast called Can I Offer You Some Feedback? I'm a business consultant and executive coach with over 20 years' experience in change management, leadership development, and naturally providing feedback to high performers. My podcast is for those of you who have a complicated relationship with feedback, whether giving, receiving, avoiding, or seeking. Feedback is essential for our development. In each episode, you'll hear from real people across industries with their ideas, perspectives, and best practices on feedback. I'll also be sharing business bites with you, simple explanations of organizational tools, management techniques, and leadership philosophies that will help you and your businesses thrive. You can listen to Can I Offer You Some Feedback on your favorite podcast app or learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.